Hey, hound dogs, I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And welcome to On the Air with Power Squared, a weekly look behind what we hope is everyone's favorite comic book, Power Squared. This week we have a special guest, Seth Latterman. Seth,
hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I've known Seth for a few years through Lionsgate, where we both worked at one time. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we did both work there at one time.
You were the EVP GM for Comic-Con HQ. That's when we met.
Yes.
So that was a kind of a streaming service, OTT, based, aimed at sort of the geek community, I guess, or how you want to describe it.
Yeah, we were trying to, you know, capture the Comic-Con experience in a year-round nature, knowing that there are Comic-Cons all over the world now, almost on a weekly basis. But with San Diego Comic-Con being, you know, the biggest one out there, we partnered with them to try to take that weekend experience and extend it year-round.
Okay. And obviously, that's not around anymore. What happened to it, I guess?
Well, there's, I mean, multiple reasons. You know, it didn't end up working out. You know, the main reason being that right as we were gearing up for launch, Lionsgate acquired Starz, and Starz is a monster of an over-the-top service, so they decided to focus their resources more on Starz as opposed to building Comic-Con. In the year and a half or so that it took to get ready to go, the over-the-top market changed. Whereas, you know, when we started there, like right when we met in like 2015, there was a lot of them starting up and everybody had a lot of high hopes. But what we realized over time was that it really just comes down to content. And you need to spend a lot of money on content. And Lionsgate, you know, didn't really want to spend money on something that they didn't fully own. Right. In Comic-Con HQ. So it was just like an unfortunate nature. So we tried and we did well. You know, we got a few thousand paying subscribers and they liked their content and it was going there. But ultimately it became like a business decision that, you know, ended up making it go away.
Okay. And then you went on, you were the head of the, was it a digital studio there?
Correct. It's a funny, you know, trend that you might hear here. But, you know, when we were doing digital studios, Lionsgate had a lot of excitement about trying to figure out that DVD VHS model of the 80s and 90s, where it was they were bringing a lot of revenue for people buying and renting content. And that's gone away a lot with the streaming channels and with there just being so much content on social media. So they were trying to figure out, is there a model where we can make these $1-2 million movies and still be able to monetize them? So when I jumped into that, there were two of their films that were getting close to airing. So we aired those films, and we released those and they didn't really make much money. So then, you know, with everything going on with Lionsgate there too, they decided they didn't want to really spend much money on that business either. So, I mean, both honestly, like, were not bad business decisions. You know, Comic-Con HQ, unfortunately, didn't really have any room to grow. It wasn't going to go anywhere with the way the over-the-top world was going right now, unless you spent tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on it. And then the digital studios, there really isn't a business model. You know, when I was, I left there, I had built a model to get into the podcast space for Lionsgate, which I thought would have been a good idea and a good play. But I ended up leaving before any decisions were really made there at that time.
Okay. Before that, you were you did other things before Comic-Con, before Lionsgate. You were with the Nerdist for a while.
Yeah, so that was one of the more fun times. So I kind of was one of the first employees there with Nerdist. You know, Hardwick and Peter Levin got some money from YouTube to start a YouTube channel, and then they took his podcast and their daily newsletter and turned it into a giant company. So, you know, I got to be there when Hardwick rose and, you know, became big and built Nerdist into a brand. And that was really my entry into kind of like the geek nerd space. I am, you know, I mean, I do things that are nerdy. I was never really into comics and like didn't play video games very much, but I was very into pop culture and, you know, movies and TV shows. along those lines, I play fantasy football, which is very nerdy. So, you know, we can talk about the Cowboys Eagles. So, but that was my foray into, you know, that nerd space. So I got to be there from day one until, you know, for about 4 years as we built that. We sold it to Legendary. And I got to, you know, get to Comic Cons and, you know, meet the people from Comic Con, which allowed me to get the job with Lionsgate and, you know, really get to meet a lot of people at the events and just really kind of like get a huge fondness for that entire space and all the fans, that love, you know, just everything in the, you know, geek nerd world. Right. I got to meet many people and become friendly with a lot. So, that was a great 4 years being there.
So do you still keep up with, you know, the nerdy world?
I do. I mean, I still watch a lot of content on TV. I mean, I read Power and Swear, obviously.
I don't know if that qualifies. But
I spend most of my time these days working and watching Pixar movies with my 3.5-year-old.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to interview me on any movie that came out in the last 15 years, I probably seen it then. I mean, you know, it's mostly through probably pop culture, you know, movies and TV shows is how I stay in it. And, you know, I tried to follow this year at Comic-Con with what they were doing just to try to support a little bit.
Yeah. Did you watch any of that? I mean,
it was a little bit. Yeah. It's tough, man. I tried to do that with Comic-Con too, right? With Comic-Con HQ, we tried to do some live content and, you know, really it's a challenge when the experience is such a big part of it. You know, just being there. You've been there many a times. Yes, I mean, yes. I've seen you there many a times. And you know what it's like. And so, like, I can get that it's a little bit more difficult to get people to watch, you know, when the panels, you know, are, I mean, watching like a Zoom panel right now is not as excited as being in Hall H and feeling all the energy there, or even a smaller room, right?
Yeah. It was also, because I took time off from work to watch the panels and stuff. And the quality was so uneven, you know, somebody would have like, you know, would have a really good setup and the next person would be sort of this blurry, you know, image or whatever. I mean, it was just kind of,
it's hard. I mean, look, they rushed to get it done, I assume, with COVID happening and everything. So, you know, I give them a lot of credit for getting something done.
Yeah.
And hopefully by next summer, it'll be, you know, a little bit better where they might be able to do it again. But I got no doubt Comic-Con will come back in full force at some point soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm a little concerned about next year if the, you know, vaccine's not widely available by midsummer. It'd be really hard to pull it off
again. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge, I imagine.
Yeah. So tell us, so you left Lionsgate and got out of production altogether?
Yeah, you know, I spent 15 years in entertainment, and, you know, what I loved doing the most in entertainment was when I worked at Nerdist, and prior to that, when I worked in reality TV. But, you know, those were my 20s and early 30s when I traveled a lot, and, you know, I worked crazy hours. And then when I got to Lionsgate, you know, once you get into the corporate world, it's a little bit different. And it just made me realize there was nothing I really wanted to do in the entertainment space anymore that would make me happy. You know, I could have continued to work in there and, you know, done fine. But like, I'm somebody who just really prefer to do what I like. And, you know, when all said and done, I'm kind of like an entrepreneur. And, you know, that's why I liked reality TV, because everyone was an individual production that you had to stand up and make happen. That's why I like Nerdist, because we were down and dirty, digital, just producing content, getting stuff done. And those worlds are changing. You know, you don't need that anymore with social media and, you know, the amount of content that's coming out there. So I had an opportunity to jump into the cannabis space, something that I've been pretty passionate about for a while. A old friend of mine was an investor in this accessories company called Meister. They do this high-end accessories. It's kind of like storage for your cannabis. So I helped them raise a little bit of money, got them off the ground. We're probably going to do a little over $1 million in revenue this year, which is pretty awesome. And now I'm just, you know, more on the board and advising them, mostly because, you know, through there, I met some other people and got some other relationships. So I'm kind of doing a bunch of different jobs in the cannabis space. I started working with this girl who's an influencer, goes by the name Koala Puffs. She's one of the larger influencers in the cannabis space, and helping manage her career a little bit. But through that, we ended up starting a CBD company called Quality. We started a THC brand. So she now has her own cannabis flower as well called Quality. So I run both her CBD company and I work with her manufacturing and distribution company to help get her cannabis out there to stores in California. Uh-huh. In addition, I got into the DC cannabis scene a little bit, where I started building a directory website over there called Urban Aroma, which allows people in the DC, New York, Barcelona areas to find cannabis that's locally local there. And then, you know, I dipped my toes a little bit in a couple other things there. So ultimately, you know, just running, you know, five or six small businesses while trying to raise a couple of kids during COVID. So that is why I am quite busy, but the days go by fast and never a dull moment. And, you know, knock on wood, thank God me and my family have been safe and everything's been going okay. I know we alluded to it a second ago. Things would be much better if my NFL team was doing better. You know, we can't have everything.
The sad thing is the Cowboys are a half game ahead of your team.
I know, man. You know, the Cowboys are going to probably win that division with like six or seven wins, and they're all going to be off against teams in that division.
Yeah.
Right?
It's really sad.
It is sad, but really, you know, things are going well for me overall. I mean, you know, things are obviously crazy in the world, it's been, you know, it's going on. It's been great, and you know, I've really enjoyed getting the opportunity to read Powered Square and just seeing your vision. I mean, I was there when you know, I remember talking to you when you started it up, and you know, you would always keep me posted on everything and send me, you know, early versions of it all, and you know, trying to get on a Comixology and just everything there. So I feel I'm very happy for you guys that you've gone through and continued it. And, you know, I genuinely really enjoy reading it. Okay. You guys have done a good job. It's a great story and I'm excited to see where it goes.
So you were one of the people that helped us with our Kickstarter when we were putting out, it was supposed to be it was issues 8 and 9.
Yeah.
And you were one of the people that stepped up and had you had a character name that you could pick and you named it after your son. Does he realize that he's been immortalized in digital format?
Not yet. Okay. Because it hasn't come out yet. But I think my wife knows and she loves it.
Well, you actually have a copy of it. Yeah. We're sort of getting around to putting issue 10 out. We're currently working on issue 16.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, hopefully,
right, I gotta open up 10 and figure out where that ended so I don't say anything I didn't say.
Well, hopefully someday soon we'll actually, you know, may hopefully make money doing it.
Look, man, you guys created a really cool little world here. I enjoy reading it, and you know, it's great content. So I think, you know, that's really like what you strive to do, right? So I think you've done a great job doing it and it's really exciting.
Okay. So do you have a favorite issue or anything like that?
I mean, obviously issue 12, where that mentions my son's name. you know, it's really honestly hard to say. Like, I mean, I've just enjoyed the story. Like, you know, I mean, I had questions for you. I know you guys were, you know, probably going to be interviewing me, but, you know, like, I mean, I'm really just interested in, you know, obviously there's some autobiographical nature to this, like, you know, and it's, you know, in a different world, but like, you know, what parts of these, like, you know, potentially true between like conversations, relationships, like, are these like, did you guys each pick your own characters? And is this, you know, like kind of like an alter ego of who you wanted to be, you know, including Uncle Brian, or, you know, that's what I've been thinking about as I read it.
Okay. I'm not Uncle Brian, by the way.
You're not?
No. No.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I did the voice when we did a character video, but it wasn't based on me.
Gotcha.
It was based on somebody that had been a teacher for both Trevor for art and Paul for guitar. And we used to think of him as their fun uncle. Since he was,
I love it.
Yeah, so we were like, well, we didn't want to have them live with their parents. That seemed a little too, you know, cliche. So, well, if they're going to school, they can live with their uncle. And so we kind of based it a little bit on him and on, I keep forgetting the guy's name from
Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
Oh, Bruce Campbell. Nice. Okay. Of course, Bruce Campbell. No, I mean, that's great. It's really hard, like, because I'm not like a huge comic book fan. So as I'm reading or not experiencing comic books, so sometimes it's a little difficult for me to read them, like knowing where the bubbles kind of fall in. So like as I'm reading them, like it's a new experience for me, you know, being able to enjoy and be able, and like see and visualize while it's coming out. So, you know, what I've really like picked up the most was just like, I love like the relationship between Marty and Eli, you know, I love like, and then I like the girl stuff, right? Because like, to me, it's like, you know, this is what I would have written kind of about me if I wanted to be like a superhero, you know, getting the cool girl and the hot girls and then liking them and the friends being there. And like, I feel like the relationships, the way you wrote them are really good. Like, you know, I like Jenny, and then I feel like this little love triangle together, ish thing could be, you know, a lot of fun as well. So, you know, I just really enjoyed how you developed the characters.
So you had asked earlier about how autobiographical this was. Yeah. So you would probably be in a better position to answer that.
Right. I would say that Marty and Eli, even though they are based on Trevor and I, are still like different versions. They're not one-to-one with us necessarily, but it's based on the core of that like twin bond,
right?
And otherwise their friends Kirby, Steve, and Don are based on a group of friends that we had in like high school.
Nice.
So, and you guys are telepathic and can read minds.
Yeah, you guys can actually read each other's mind. I mean, did you guys, like, as growing up as twins, you know, like, ever think you'd have, like, any type of powers or be able to communicate with each other or just be, like, in any way special because you are?
I guess kind of. We, like, growing up, people saw us as like one person in a way instead of like individuals.
Kind of like Sam and Eric from
yeah
nice, that's awesome. So yeah, I mean, and then like, you know, I'm trying to look back and think like individual specific episodes, like I think to me, you know, when Dr. Atlas came around early on, that, you know, made that kind of like threw it in a loop, but I'm trying to draw a blank. I'm drawing a blank on her name, but the woman who drew the diagram and was able to kind of like go through it.
Oh, Professor Theorem.
Yeah, obviously, right? Theorem, duh.
Yeah. What's a name like Theorem? She knew she'd be a mathematician. I think
exactly. Yeah, I remember that now. So I thought that was cool. And like, it, you know, it was like kind of, it was a cool twist in there the first time when she kind of just disappeared, wondering where she went. You knew something had to do a little bit with like the whiteboard. Yeah. I thought that was really cool. And then, you know, obviously, you know, just her backstory and not really even knowing what her deal is, right? You know, like, do we trust her? Do we not trust her? Like, she's obviously, there's something interesting with her.
Right. And she actually, we continue the next story arc has her in it as well.
Awesome.
13 and 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just so you keep you up to date, 15 is sort of a, how Mocha and the boys met, that situation, expanded on it from the second issue. We kind of show that, so we expanded on that, and then we're starting another story arc that's Mocha and Raven, who's another yokai, their relationship, and kind of bringing that up to involving the boys. So we're trying to, yeah. You have any other questions? You said you had
if I can keep asking you guys questions.
Oh, great. Yeah, go ahead.
So hold on. I've written some down actually before. I'm trying to get to them. So, this is more of a global question. So spawning this idea and you guys, you know, coming up with it, obviously the twins aspect was something that, you know, hits close. It makes sense. And, you know, I know, David, we talked about this originally, like it's hard pressed to find many comics that have to deal with twins.
Right.
You know, right. So like, what was the thought, you know, was that, did you find that to be a little bit easier, or like, was that as you were trying to figure out what their superpowers would be, you know, how to build a comic around it? Do you think like having it as like twins and, you know, the telepathy thing and just like knowing that there could be something connecting was like kind of like a catalyst for like building out like their arc and like how they would become superheroes?
Well, I know that when we were talking about trying to do a comic book and we wanted to do it with twins, and we thought, well, everybody thinks twins are telepathic,
yeah,
even if they're not. So that's kind of a superpower. So that was kind of the first one we thought they would have.
Yeah.
And then we were trying to sort of not have them be, you know, they can't fly and you know, that kind of stuff. So we're trying to think of things they could have that would be kind of, you know, cool, but not like, you know, they're not Superman or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, still human. I think we just sort of threw out some ideas and kind of came up with the ones that they have.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, what I like about it too is like the way they got it, right? You know, it's like, it's a cool little story, or it just like, and especially how they found out like why they got it.
Right.
You know, and you know, all that. So, you know, that's why I like you're getting into in the, some of the later episodes, like, it's not so great to be a superhero, right? All the time. And you know, you were, you know, for the last year of your lives in that, it's, you know, or Marty and Eli's lives, it's been a challenge, whereas prior it wasn't. So, you know, you may get the girls and you may have some power and you may have that, but is that really that great?
Right. Yeah. That's one of the kind of the issues they kind of tackle in, I guess, 13 and 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marty kind of.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, girls always coming between friends.
And we have that happen as well. So,
blinders on, you know, women. Yeah. But no, I like that there are some really strong female characters in this, too. Right. You know, of course, just a lot of them are bad. But
Mocha's good.
Mocha's good. And Jenny's great, obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sir.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Or,
so yeah, and then with Uncle Brian, that was kind of my thinking, like, you know, I love how he kind of like acts, you know, like the cool parent, but like still has like their best interests in heart and like can still get mad at him, and like you can tell Marty and Eli are good people because they like genuinely want to make him happy with them.
Right.
And also, like, yeah, I was just interested in like how you guys came up with that dynamic. Cause, you know, obviously like kids and like if any type of uncle aunt, you know, it can go in a million different directions. But you ended up making it as like a pretty close and good relationship where you can tell that they, you know, like him and respect him, along the way while, you know, they go.
I think some of that has to do with, at the time when we were doing issue number one, the relationship with that person was pretty good, and they were pretty, you know, I kind of felt like they were able to talk to him about things that they didn't actually talk to me about. Right.
Right.
And so they had kind of a good relationship with him at the time. That's sort of changed over time, but, we just were trying to capture some of that kind of, you know, vibe, I guess they were happy with him.
Yeah.
Gotcha. The cool uncle.
Yes.
The uncles are always cooler than the dads, right?
Because dads, you gotta, you know, discipline. And
yeah, uncles don't discipline. Grandparents don't discipline. They get to come in for the fun times.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, absolutely. I brought you a gift. Oh, you're the best. Yeah. So.
And then, so Paul, like, which one? I mean, do you align with Eli more than, or with Marty more than Eli, or did you guys pick a certain character that you wanted to write and control more?
Yeah, I think I align with Marty more because, he's based on me to some extent.
Right. Guitar player, because he had taken guitar lessons.
Yeah. But he's also, I guess, more, he's less introverted than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a difference there.
Right.
That's the beauty of these. You get to make yourselves a little bit more extroverted, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, that's pretty. So with that, you know, with it being a little bit more Marty, you know, obviously, you know, there's got the, you know, one's got Jenny and then one's got a little bit of a love triangle.
Yeah.
Did that spawn from, you know, one of you being more like, you know, I'd like one type, you know, more like a little bit conservative, whereas the other one could be a little bit more wild? Or, you know, is it just wanting to have two different characters?
I think it's more like just having different characters.
Okay.
Because I don't really have too much experience with relationships, if I can be honest about that.
That's fine. This is a confession time.
I got you.
I mean, I try.
Yeah, well, we wanted to, in the book, to have them have relationships with,
yeah,
you know, women. And so some of that was, and I know that sort of Jenny evolved a little bit, because I think originally some of the scenes with Jenny were going to be with Mocha, but we kind of changed that around as we wrote. And Jenny was sort of based on somebody from Disgaea.
Yeah, well, at least appearance-wise.
Yeah, appearance-wise. And her name was Jenny. And yeah. So that was sort of the start of her character. And then, so we wanted to have one of them have sort of, we figured, you know, Eli would be sort of we didn't expect him of the two to have the relationship with her, so that was kind of what we want.
Yeah.
No. And like, have you guys been expanding on the arc as you, you know, have gone, or do you kind of have like a lot of the story in mind? Like, do you have the ending and, you know, everything as you go? Meaning, like, I liked, you know, Jenny's dad obviously getting involved. You know, was that always part of it as you guys were trying to build out different individual storylines, or did things kind of spawn as you're going?
We don't have an end point yet in mind. And so we're just trying to explore different possible stories. We're working on a couple of different story arcs, one in which they sort of get involved in a sort of a U.S. intelligence kind of operation. And then there's one where they're doing battle against other yokai. So we're trying to sort of, you know, kind of expand it and see where it goes.
I love it, man. That's exciting. So, I mean, with that, where it's good. I mean, I think it's like fun, like where your mind's going with it. And like, I mean, so do you know where it's going to end?
No.
Or do you have any type of arc that, you know, where you want it to eventually go?
I think we're still talking about, you know, at some point introducing the parents into it. You know, I'd like to, we don't have it, but we don't have like an end point already picked or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the plan is just to keep it going and then,
until the
money
runs out. Then.
How do you monetize? I mean, you know, these days in the comic business, you know, obviously you've got the IP, which would be the ultimate thing if somebody would find it and want to do something with it. Without that, like, you know, from the issue to issue basis,
we're not breaking even at it so far.
the idea. Sorry, my dog just walked in and opened my door.
That's okay. Walked out. you know, we have some merchandise that people can buy, Seth. And it's available T-shirts and things like that. We're trying to we're working with they started out as an on-demand print service for us, Artith Merrick, and they're trying to come up with an anthology to have it distributed through. I'll say Platinum. Sorry,
what? Diamond.
Diamond. Something valuable through Diamond. Have an anthology, and they're going to include us in that. There was some talk at one time of being part of a promotion for Canon printers. I don't know what happened with that with COVID and everything.
Right.
So we're hoping to sort of, you know, if we can get the book out there, at least in a serialized version, that would help us. And then, you know, we would like eventually to be, you know, distributed through Diamond. But at this point we're, kind of, you know, a lot of stuff seems like it's sort of on hold for us at this moment.
Gotcha.
We were gonna do a signing on the 14th of March, and everything closed down on the 13th.
On Pi Day.
Yeah, we were gonna do a signing at Golden Apple in Hollywood.
Oh man.
Yeah, and then it just everything collapsed right at that moment.
Yeah.
Very disappointing. And we had Paul and I had taken a class at UCLA about we'd like to pitch this eventually as an animated series. So we were taking a class about pitching, and we had that one Saturday, and then the next Saturday, it was two Saturdays in a row, and the third Saturday everything was shut down. So it was kind of just squeezed that in.
Yeah.
Right. So, and we sent you saw a sort of an early version of the pitch packet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to work on that some more.
Yeah. I mean, look, you've got a world, which is like the hardest part, right? Which you've already kind of built. My best friend is an animated writer in Hollywood. He's worked with like Mike Judge on The Good Family, Beavis and Butthead stuff before, and he's doing Exploding Kittens right now, or they're developing it. So at some point we should talk offline. I could potentially text you to at least, you know, have a conversation and give you two cents or thoughts, but he's like my best friend.
Okay. Sure. We'll take any help where we can get it.
He's a good dude. He's a Raiders fan. So I don't know how we feel about that.
Oh, well, okay. We just won't bring up football. Is he happy they're in Vegas, or is that?
He's very happy they're in Vegas. He's not happy he can't go to Vegas to watch them. Right. He's very happy that they're there. And that new stadium is pretty awesome.
Right. So is SoFi, I guess.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's not talk about football. It's not a really happy subject. You have any other questions about Power Squared?
I mean, I hit my bigger ones. You know, I mean, I can keep talking if you want. How about this? Okay, so your friends. So obviously, you know, one of your friends, you know, had a little animosity, or Marty and I's friends had a little animosity. I've drawn a blank on his name now. I apologize. And then he got recruited by Dr. Atlas to do something against. I know you were based off of friends. Was he based off of somebody in specific that's like a little bit more dickish of a friend than the rest of them?
So you're talking about Kirby.
Kirby, yeah.
Yeah, and he used to be sort of there are three friends, are Kirby, Steve, and Don. And Kirby was sort of the ringleader of those three. And they meet the boys, and initially the boys, Marty and Eli, are just sort of, you know, part of the group. And then suddenly they're raised above them because they had done some heroic things at school. This is in the issues that are out there. And so Kirby kind of feels jealous. And I wasn't really thinking of him as being dickish, but just sort of... He had sort of a fantasy that he and, you know, he had told his friends that he and Jennifer had dated, and in fact they hadn't really. And
even the editor, the woman, he also like said that they dated it.
Steve said they dated. We haven't really done as much with Steve and Don as we could. They're sort of the, you know, the friends at this point. They do get involved in the stories, but we haven't really keyed on them.
To more directly answer the question, I think it's fair to say that Kirby, Steve, and Don are not directly based on specific people, more the idea of those people.
Right.
Get dark. Okay. It's dark in here. Okay, more of an idea. Okay, so now do they know, you said you have friends like that, though, that you know, you have a group of friends. Do they know that you've written these characters kind of based off of them?
Not really.
Not really. And those people, those friends aren't necessarily people you're in contact with now.
Right.
Right. So they wouldn't.
Okay. Gotcha. Makes sense.
Things, you know, people leave, grow and leave and stuff like that. So, but it was just.
But I imagine, like, in comics with them going so long, you just need to really develop a lot of characters out and build their storylines and all that. I think you've done a really good job of introducing a lot of characters, and, you know, there's nobody really out here that you don't really know that much about that you're wanting to.
Right. So, and we tried really hard in the first issue to sort of set up characters that we could use later. Because in the, you know, Dr. Brubaker and Dr. Jordan are people that you see initially in the audience when Instructor Miller is listening in awe to Dr. Atlas talk about the Viribus compound. Mm-hmm. And then we actually
pick up on that.
And then there's a video that he shows of this kid, Billy O'Shea, picking the car up off his mom. And we're actually going to, in 16 and 17 and 18, we're going back and bringing Billy O'Shea back as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we never leave anybody behind. You know?
But, so how long from, you know, incubation till completion for one issue? I know you leapfrog and you do certain things while you're working on other ones, but
it took about, I want to say, several years to get it to get the first issue out. It took a long time.
Yeah, for like production reasons.
Because we had this idea and we started working on scripts, and then we spent a couple of years literally looking for somebody to draw it.
Right, I remember talking to you about that. You went through a couple of people.
We went through the Comic-Con Comic Creator Connection and did that, I guess, 2 years? And one year at WonderCon. And we thought we'd found... Every year we think we'd found somebody, and then it would sort of disappear. And then we thought we had somebody, and we tried to work with her for a little while, and it kind of just sort of...
Fizzled.
And so then when I started working at Lionsgate, we realized, we should pay somebody to do it. And so we found an artist through a Facebook group, and he drew the first 5 issues. And then we now have Rachel, who was watching this.
Hi, Rachel.
Who is now
doing a great job.
Yeah, she does. She's.
I really like it, man. It's great. It looks great.
She's really good, and I think it's closer to the original vision that we had for the characters. Especially, you wanted sort of a Western anime mix of look, and so I think she understands that world better, and so I think she's brings a lot to the table for us.
Going through the Comic Creator Connection thing wasn't bad to do, because with a couple of people that we did end up talking to, they did actually get us thinking more about how to make the book more appealing.
Actually, we had run it. I don't know if we met this guy at Comic-Con, but there was a guy who was a storyboard artist at DreamWorks Animation that we thought we were going to work with, and he even... he had ideas about the backstory that we hadn't really thought about, and he actually even wrote a script, which was sort of freaked us out. So we had sort of, okay, so we rewrote stuff, and we went back to him and goes, oh yeah, I can't do it anymore, and things at work have picked up and blah, blah, blah. So it was, we needed to find somebody that we were actually going to have to, you know, pay to do it. So, yeah, and I think things have worked out really well. We were helped a little bit along the lines by Comixology. We knew a guy there, Chip Mosier, who we had sent him the first 2 issues, and he gave us some feedback about, you know, the story's okay, the art's all right, the lettering could be better, and the coloring sucks, basically. And then he helped us find a colorist. Which led us through SCAD, South Carolina, and Art and Design, School of Art and Design.
Savannah College of Art and Design.
Thank you. And I know there's an S in there. Savannah College of Art and Design. And that's how we ended up kind of with Rachel, was through that connection.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it's worked out. We've gone through a few colorists in the meantime. And then... we actually ended up, the colorist we have now is a friend of yours.
Yeah.
So it worked out.
that's awesome. Yeah, like I was looking at the page, you know, all the people who end up doing. I was looking at the credits page as you were going through names.
Yeah.
So how come so Trevor doesn't really do much of the writing?
He's part of the he helped kind of create it, and he does get a look at all the scripts before we go forward with them.
Yeah.
But he does the lettering.
He does lettering. Yeah, we kind of we wanted him to be involved, and we needed
it's a good letter. Man. It's yeah. a good job.
Yeah,
it's not easy at yeah. all.
There's a little career path he could take if he decides to do that or make some money on the side.
Yeah.
So yeah, he kind of taught himself how to do it, and he's come along really well.
That's awesome.
And it's really cool for us is, you know, if somebody has to edit, you know, if it's too long, because the dialogue can be pretty long sometimes. We're getting better at that, I think, as we go along. I always felt like if somebody had to edit it, I'd rather have it be him than somebody I don't know.
Fair enough.
So.
And then Trevor has actually come up with an idea for a future story arc.
Right, which we haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah.
And then he's also working on his own comic book.
Yeah.
Oh, really cool.
Yeah. Which we've talked about maybe tagging on to an issue of Power Squared.
Yeah.
Gotten that far yet. But he's awesome. He is involved.
Love it.
So, anything else? Any other questions for us?
I'm good, man. I'm just really impressed. Okay. I know it takes a lot of work, and I know how long you guys have been doing it, and you know, and it's not cheap and it takes time. And I'm very impressed with how good it is, and how much you guys have done with it.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And feel free to tell your friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know. I wish I was still at Nerdist, although I don't know if there really is much of a Nerdist anymore.
Yeah.
But
We'll talk offline at some point about your animation writing friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm around, except two Fridays ago.
Hey, you're busy. I mean, you've got a lot of things going on, and you know we're not that important to you. It's okay.
No, that is absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true. I made it a very big point to be here today on time. I wasn't. My computer was dead. But I planned my day around it.
Okay, so, I appreciate that.
No, but thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate being on here. I'd be happy to come on again if you ever thought I was of value, and you know, if there's anything I can do along the way, I'm always here to help.
Okay, I appreciate it very much.
Of course.
All right, so.
So if you are watching this on YouTube and you want to see more like this, subscribe and ring the notification bell if you want to see more like this, and get notified exactly when these videos go up.
Right. So until next time, I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And you've been on the air with Power Squared.